This is Audible.
Podium Audio presents The Legend of Randidly Ghost Hound 2, a lit RPG adventure, Book 2 of The Legend of Randidly Ghost Hound. Written by Norit Flood, writing as Puddles 4263. Performed by McLeod Andrews. Prologue. Thick velvet curtains flushed the interior of the club in a coloration reminiscent of tomato paste. At night, it was the most popular nightclub in a Franksburg irrevocably shaped by the advent of the system. Right now, its main occupancy were empty booths, cocktail tables, and one Missy Carp, alongside a handful of her underlings. A candelabra sat in the middle of the table in front of her, giving Missy a flickering illumination while she trimmed her fingernails. Clink. Clink. The small clippings littered the tiled floor. Four subordinates watched nervously around the cushy booth, memorizing where the clippings fell. If Missy came back later tonight and everything wasn't spotless, they would be unceremoniously tossed out onto the street. That was simply how the carp businesses worked. Clink, clink, clink. Missy pouted at a small flaw she created in the angle of her nail.
Dominic, I need you.
Of course, Missy.
An emaciated young man walked out from a door near the back of the club and bowed. He gestured to the ring finger on her expectant, outstretched hand, and a soft glow surrounded it. Within 30 seconds, her slightly miscut nail grew back to its previous length. Missy favored him with a wide smile, then focused on the finger once more.
Clink. Ah, truly being a businesswoman is difficult. Too much stress.
Missy sat down her stainless steel clippers and sighed, eyeing Dominic.
Can't you put on some weight? I swear looking at your bones makes me hungry, and I'm trying to watch my figure.
Missy shifted her significant bulk as she uncrossed and recrossed her legs.
I'll have an extra pudding cup after dinner,
Dominic replied. Missy's lips twisted.
Is your shitty body really something a pudding cup could fix? Well, anyway, time for business. How are the reports? How many visitors do I have? Oh, and any gentlemen callers? Missy, you know either Edgar or I would kill any gentleman who tried to take you from us,
Dominic said with another bow.
In terms of the reports, last night was not a good night for us, but that can be partially blamed on the monster attack on Franksburg. Too many individuals were scared away from the casino and lounges. Our companionship wing continued to be patronized, but with the shortage of workers, we received quite a few complaints last night of too many clients back to back. Bah, thankless whores.
Missy drummed her fingers on the table.
Do they think I don't know that they are sucking city officials off on the sly? Announce to the waitresses that we are making cuts to the club staff, due to hard times after the monster attack, of course. I'm sure that most will take the hint and switch to hospitality. Of course. I'll send in the first visitor. Wait,
Missy Carp interrupted. She snapped her fingers.
Actually, ferret out one of those waitresses earning something under the table. Bribe the official and beat the girl to death. Make it seem like a murder. That way they understand the danger of working on their own. Ah, my heart bleeds for these vulnerable women out there all alone.
Dominic gave her another small bow.
I'll have it done. In addition, the guards you wanted are waiting outside. Send them in.
Missy waved her hand. The wide doors opposite her opened and a group filed in to stand before her. She observed them with narrowed eyes while her mind worried at the current possibilities available to her budding empire. There were a lot of moving pieces. It was hard to handle all the directions that Franksburg was shifting. The arrival of the people with classes from the north, the establishment of the newbie village, the rising star of Raina. Being the head of the seedier organizations within Franksburg was a tough responsibility, even as the system's brutal violence eased the disapproval most people felt towards her business ventures, and her brother, Edgar, sure as hell wasn't going to take care of it. There was only her, and Edgar would affably follow her lead. It was only in the cruelty department that he was her vast superior. And now there were reports of a strange man fucking around with her girls, who could make others sick with a glance. Missy gave Ezzy a glance. He stood with his hands behind his back and his chin raised. Perhaps he had military training. Out of all of their hired muscle, he was the one with the most potential. Although the senator had informed her in confidence there would be limits on who was allowed to get a class initially, as they tried to gauge how well their defenses would hold, he would ensure that a few of the CARP's nominated chosen would get first crack at classes. Ezzy was smart, and before today seemed to be capable. She would probably still send him for a class after this, but it was annoying that this happened now. Were the events related? But the senator kept the individuals with classes under his paranoid eyes. There was no way he would have missed out on such a powerful individual among the classers who had arrived, unless he was one of their agents used for infiltration. Sighing, Missy set those thoughts aside. They were useless at this juncture. She raised a finger and beckoned Ezzy forward, out of line with the rest of her bouncers.
Did you get any information about him? Who he was visiting? What the purpose was?
Ezzy nodded sorrowfully. Then, after a slight hesitation, he said,
He did give his name, before I passed out, but only so we'd know to leave him alone from now on. He called himself the Ghost Hound.
Missy snorted.
What sort of dumb name is that?
Shivering, Ezzy could only shake his head. Several serious-faced classers from Donnyton watched the road that led into their valley. The efforts of their raid teams had cleared the nearby dungeon and bought the village a respite. Despite the constant threat of raid bosses, the courtyard behind the fortification was filled with a large group of people. The warm mid-morning sunshine illuminated the strange scene.
What are they doing?
Annie asked distastefully, folding her arms across her chest. Dozer shrugged.
The trees come from the Ghost Hound, so people think they're special. And that aura they give off is pretty good. So every day when the trees dance...
On the high parapet, the magical tree wiggled its branches back and forth, where seven burning leaves hung. The few dozen people, standing below with worshipful gazes, mirrored its whimsical movements. Declan yawned exaggeratedly.
Definitely feels like a weird cult. At least the tree's at the guard station so they can assist if another monster horde comes. Might as well be useful while you make yourself look like an idiot.
Declan froze and smiled.
No more kicking around, boyos. Glendale finally found that tier two raid boss. Are you two ready?
Dozer and Annie nodded, their individual squads stretching in preparation for what was to come. Their movements didn't distract the enthusiastic group of people dancing beneath Arbor. Annie checked her quiver and rubbed her fingers along the smooth wooden shaft of one of her arrows. It was likely overkill, but the classers were still filled with a bellyful of discontent after the losses they suffered on that horrible rainy night. Losses that mostly resulted from Turtletown shunting away a portion of its own dungeon monsters, which allowed them to join the horde that attacked Donnyton. As the group finished strapping on their armor and weapons, Annie looked around and frowned.
Where's the little kitty, Dozy?
Dozer shrugged. One of his subordinates spoke up in his stead.
She's still with Daniel. For whatever reason, the lady has chosen him as her personal pincushion.
One woman from Declan's squad chuckled.
I heard he earned scratch resistance, and it's already at level 7. I can't tell if he's lucky or pitiful.
Declan clapped.
That crafty bastard, keeping all the fun for himself, while the rest of us are out here risking our lives. Brings a tear to my eye. The unfairness of the world. But what can you do, right?
Dozer rolled his eyes.
Let's get to it. Tonight is the unveiling of the NCC distillery. Apparently it's fermented from the Ghost Hound's weird strain of corn. I'm not missing that to kill a few monsters.
Declan looked around the group with a wide smile,
Perfect. We needed something to lift our spirits. Here's the deal. Whoever kills the bastard won't pay for a single drop of drink tonight. Now, who wants to bleed this bastard dry?
As soon as Declan made the announcement, most of the group's eyes began to sparkle, and they fell into a practiced formation. Sighing, Annie shook her head.
Men,
she muttered. Chapter 1. Randed Lee had quite the headache. Even though he hadn't been facing the applicants directly, their shrill and uncertain voices made him very uncomfortable. He could survive alone in a dungeon. He could track and face down a newbie village tribulation, fighting it until he found an opening and drove his spear through its skull. He could simultaneously slaughter a wolf raid boss and a pack of its dangerous lieutenants while protecting his ex-girlfriend. He was capable of training and preparing himself for whatever fucked up curveball the system was going to throw at him next. However, being a temp line cook in Franksburg was the closest Randed Lee wanted to get to a customer-facing service role. In terms of social skills, he would gladly admit his current set were woefully inadequate, considering how influential he was becoming in the post-system world. So now, he sat up in the canopy of an oak tree, looking glumly at the line of people stretching away from the vehicle convoy that he and Alana brought down from Donnington. They had a problem, although Randed Lee supposed it was a good problem to have. The amount of people who wanted to come back with them to Donnington was staggering. Almost 700 people showed up, bearing overstuffed and worn backpacks and wearing bloodless expressions. Randed Lee grew more anxious just by the way they squirmed as Devon, the leader of the security squad that came down with Alana and Randed Lee, marked down their stat distributions and skills, slowly getting a general feel for the population.
Obviously, we aren't going to stop anyone from making the trek to join Donnington.
Randed Lee pursed his lips, thinking about the lack of any overt signs of Donnington's tribulation, while a level 20 raid boss managed to appear within Franksburg's newbie barrier.
We need to get back, and we can't bring all these people with us. Not if we don't want the return journey to take a week.
The stat questionnaire for applicants had been insisted on by Daniel, with Regina's support. Randed Lee knew he was never going to be the one to actually handle the details, so he'd shrugged and assented. But now that he'd seen the exacting detail it demanded, his mood soured. He went to Devon, looked over the questionnaire, and ripped most of the pages up. Instead, Randed Lee gave the squad members a rather straightforward question to ask. In Donnington, people are generally divided by their jobs. Which of the following jobs would you prefer? Administration, warrior, doctor, farmer, archer, scout, mage, crafting, construction. After that, all they needed to do was gather some basic status information. Randed Lee knew people would shy away from things like administration and farmer, but he had hopes that some of the practical women and men would gravitate towards crafting and construction positions.
Or maybe the population of Franksburg will be realistic about their options.
Randed Lee thought as he scanned the long line of bodies stretching away from their caravan. Many looked exhausted and scared. These were not the ones bold or adventurous enough to join the freedom fighters.
Mrs. Hamilton definitely needs more talented workers.
Of course, some of this group would probably see the moniker of mage in his question and decide to try their luck in obtaining that sort of class, but that was acceptable for now. From what Randed Lee heard, Clarissa's branching lightning skill left a profound impact. After seeing the versatility of that power, it was hard to accept just swinging a sword around.
No one talks about the potions she burned through to constantly activate her skills, though.
Randed Lee chuckled to himself. After getting his subordinates set up with the next question, Devon walked back over to Randed Lee's vantage point in the trees.
With those changes, we should finish in about 2 hours, Devon said, scanning the crowd.
Randed Lee nodded. Daniel might be somewhat upset that he cut out 90% of the information he wanted, but they needed to be practical. Lingering here for too long would be dangerous. Randed Lee's expression shifted to surprise when he recognized a few individuals in line. There was the man he'd met while chopping vegetables, who desperately wanted to cut faster, and also Cassie, looking around nervously as she stood next to a hooded woman who was obviously Raina. Toward the end of the line, Randy recognized the guffaw of that determined man, Cesar, who had been paired with him while digging holes. Seeing them all, Randy almost felt guilty. They were sucking a lot of talent away from Franksburg. But the more Randy looked, the gloomier his expression became. One individual he'd been waiting for was conspicuously absent. Tessa, Randidly's ex-girlfriend, and the first individual he recognized from his life before the system arrived and tried to kill them all, had not taken his invitation well.
"Can't you see that I don't want to live like you? I hate all this," she'd said.
Then she gestured to the wolf blood that drenched the left side of his body.
"I hate the sort of world you're living in now. What happened to you?"
"I've become strong," Randidly had wanted to say to her. At the time, those words felt woefully inadequate in front of Tessa's fear and pain. Instead, he simply stayed silent and allowed her to walk away.
"I have to take care of something. If the process finishes, start heading north. No need to wait for me. I'll catch up," Randy said to Devon, and hopped down from his perch.
Some people gave him strange looks, but he quickly lost himself in the crowd. Randy knew he should let Tessa's reaction go, but he couldn't. He had no reason to force her to move. He was the one who broke things off with her, and he definitely wasn't trying to reignite their intimacy. Deep in his heart, he could locate no lingering affections. But he still had positive memories of their time together. For that, he wanted to spare her the struggle that Franksburg was going to become. Last night was brutal, and it was only the beginning of an entire week of hell. Franksburg's classers were out training, but Randidly knew things would be even bloodier before the week was done. Randidly moved through the outskirts and into the interior of Franksburg. Dull-eyed workers drifted aimlessly to their jobs, ignoring the piles of monster bodies that had been stacked against the buildings. Wrinkling his nose, Randidly picked up the pace. "If they truly mean to leave the bodies here, the scent in the air will shift by tomorrow." At the same time, Randidly couldn't blame Franksburg's government. Most of their effort was being funneled toward power leveling their new classers, while the remainder of their manpower patched up the citizens who were induced into a feral episode by Reyna's song. Unfortunately, the public sanitation got lost in the shuffle. Not that all of the government's apathy was negative. Randidly spotted several individuals sifting through the bodies, picking out those that appeared to be less shredded than the others. They clumsily harvested claws, pelts, teeth, meat, and any other usable parts they could find. If nothing else, at least this was a wake-up call. Randidly looked up at the looming apartment buildings that lined the city block. The old world, we can't cling to it. If humanity is going to survive, it needs to move forward. Soon he came upon a familiar portion of Franksburg. Randidly grimaced slightly as he walked up to the open doors of Tessa's apartment building. This was the portion of the city the raid boss had led other monsters into the interior. As a result, the pavement was painted in thick strokes of blood. It was something of a relief to walk into the trash-filled hallways. Here, all the detritus was of human making. As he ascended to Tessa's floor and exited the stairwell, Randidly narrowed his eyes. Once again, men in sleeveless shirts, covered in tattoos, lounged around. This time the men pressed themselves against the walls and stood at attention when they recognized him. The head, Bouncer, who Tessa had told him was named Ezzy, stepped forward, wringing his hands.
"Mr. Ghost Hound, sir, I'm very sorry for the misunderstanding on your last visit. Let me assure you it won't happen again. You are free to come and go as you please."
A thin, hot rod of tension slid down between his shoulders, but Randidly forced himself to relax. Tessa might be underestimating this system, but she was right that Randidly needed to learn to handle social situations more effectively. He tried to take the first steps toward that by smiling at this nervous man.
"It's not an issue. You were doing your job."
Randidly made to brush past him and move toward Tessa's room, but as he awkwardly coughed, prodded by the uncomfortable stick of social convention, Randidly looked over his shoulder. as he chewed on his lip for several seconds before speaking.
Sir, I just, my boss has a message for you.
Oh, who's your boss? Some of the other hired muscle in the hallway stirred some at Randy's question. Meanwhile, Ezzy wiped sweat from his brow.
Yes, it's just, it's from Missy Karp. She owns the several very reputable establishments in the city. She's the one who employs Tessa.
Oh? Randy's frown deepened. He might not have ever heard of this woman, but he certainly understood that she must be the source of these loitering assholes. Even as they stood with their backs against the stained and peeling wallpaper, Randy had a hard time believing they were part of a reputable business. And if the reason Tessa refused his offer to come to Donnyton was because of pressure from her boss... Humming to himself, Randy turned all the way around. As he flinched and took a step back, Randy favored the man with a sharp smile. Then his gaze drifted to the ground. I wonder if spearing roots would reach all the way up here. Probably not. I can't sense any roots in the vicinity. I'll need to spend quite a bit of mana to bridge the distance. I should keep this weakness in mind in the future. Congratulations. Your skill root manipulation has grown to level 38. The notification of his skill level increasing brought Randy back to the present. Still stuck in a strained staring contest with Ezzy. He stopped thinking about whether he could use spearing roots inside of a building. Of course, he had other skills.
Don't misunderstand,
Ezzy said hastily, stepping backwards.
Missy Karp allows all of her employees to come and go freely. She wishes you luck on your recruitment drive and hopes you enjoyed your time in Franksburg. And that if you ever have the opportunity to return to this wonderful city, she is willing to make her compound and significant connections at her disposal available to the good people of Donnyton.
Randy relaxed, though his eyes narrowed in suspicion. Rather than a threat, this was a business proposition. The more political the situation became, the more his stomach gurgled in discomfort. The trip to Franksburg had given him a clue about Ace and Sydney, and allowed him to approach the problem of the system with a less restricted view, but it also felt like he'd thrust himself into a dizzying whirlpool of social obligations. Yet even through his discomfort, what struck Randy the most was how astute this woman must be to attempt to approach him directly. Perhaps it was a coincidence, but it could also mean this was a woman who listened very closely to the direction the wind blew.
Tell her that I appreciate the offer and I will report it to Donnyton's council.
Randy walked away, planning to end the conversation by putting Tessa's door between them. No one tried to speak with him again. He knocked on the door and was surprised to find one of Tessa's roommates answer. She ushered him inside, taking him directly to Tessa's room, where his ex-girlfriend, the raid boss sympathizer, sat wrapped in a quilt, staring out the window. Before Randy could try and talk about what happened in the abandoned mall, Tessa asked,
Was Sydney the reason you broke up with me?
Randy opened his mouth, more as a way to fill the silence than an indication he had any idea how to answer. Her voice was oddly even, almost monotone, and her gaze didn't waver from the window. Slowly he closed his mouth. In all honesty, it had been. Sydney and the lies she requested of him was only a single part of his larger unhappiness, but her existence pushed him toward the breakup.
Yes, Randy said.
He'd been brutally succinct when he ended their relationship, leaving her crying on the floor of her apartment. For that callous treatment, he owed her a bit of honesty. Snorting, Tessa swore and pulled the blanket tighter around her shoulders.
That fucking cunt! Did Ace know? That his best friend was fucking his fiancée?
Randy's eyes narrowed. It wasn't like that. We weren't.
What's the point in lying now? They're both already dead anyway. Is a life with me really so bad? I'm here, right now.
Barely containing his rage and small burst of panic, Randy managed to force out,
I'm trying to say that we never...
Do you think I'm an idiot? Do you think Ace was an idiot? Both of you kept disappearing together for those few weeks. Did you think once we noticed, we didn't talk? And how, when we compared our notes, the schedules fit so nicely together? God, your fists are so fucking big, and yet you still aren't man enough.
Just fucking listen for a minute.
Randedly growled, but Tessa was too far gone, working up a head of steam for herself.
Why should I? Both of you would give a convenient excuse, then slip away. At least you were smart. You stuck to during the day, during the week. That's why it took me so long to even think of it, let alone believe it, that fucking little slut.
Let me stop you right there. Randedly's voice was cool, but his emerald eyes blazed. The fury at being ignored, the fear that Tessa was right about his friends being dead, his exhaustion after their fight in the mall. Everything spun together into something ugly. His vision went red. Randedly wanted to grab her attention, force her to pay attention to him. He activated agony. At this point, activating skills was as easy as breathing. Ezzy only had a moment when his new danger instincts warned him to run away before a wave of vicious, head-wrenching pain knocked the wind out of him. The pain came in waves, eroding his awareness of the surroundings. He distantly noticed whimpering as the other bouncers in the hall collapsed. He was only a few seconds behind them. He attempted to brace himself against the wall, and his hand somehow glanced off and brought his forehead thunking against the peeling wallpaper. The pain brought him a brief moment of clarity, which only allowed him to be conscious of his slow collapse. Whatever was happening, it subdued them all almost instantly. Even Ezzy, who had been undergoing special training to raise his skills and improve his stats, was rendered insensible by the waves of pain making his vision swim. What really brought a chill to his heart was that when he checked, his health was decreasing, moving rapidly towards zero. Some survival instinct flared in his chest. He staggered and swayed, clawing his way up the wall into a standing position. Although his instinct screamed for him to run far away and hide, as he pushed through them, stumbling up to the door the ghost hound had entered, there could be only one source for this. Grunting, as he raised his leg and made use of his kicking mastery, smashing the cheap wood and ripping through the deadbolt. Once inside, the pain doubled. And as he bit his lip, struggling to stay conscious, he moved across a ground that refused to remain still and through a room that spun around him, heading to the back with the door slightly ajar, where the powerful aura emanated. As he wasn't even able to make out the figure wrapped in air distortions, but in his heart, he knew there was only one person who could cause this. A monster towered in the middle of the room, all jagged edges and wafting fury.
Look at me!
Eyelids fluttering, as he leaned against the door jamb, left almost completely drained by the effort to make it here. He worked at his heavy and fat tongue, struggling to say something, anything.
Sir!
That was all Ezzy was able to complete, because the ghost hound turned and looked at him. Really looked at him, with the whole of his intensity. The ghost hound's face was twisted into a scowl, and those emerald pupils burned like a chemical fire, bright and dangerous. In those eyes, Ezzy was forced to confront a truth about himself. He would never be a match for the man standing in front of him. Perhaps a month ago this man had been human, but no longer. Now he was the ghost hound.
You'll kill...
Ezzy blubbered, his words more slobber than syllable, and all at once the pain stopped. Gasping, Ezzy fell to his knees. The ghost hound pressed his eyes closed and brought his hand to the bridge of his nose. When he opened them, his eyes had faded to their usual innocuous forest green.
I apologize. I'm really so sorry. I lost my temper.
Ezzy could only watch as the ghost hound touched Tessa's shoulder. When she slumped onto her bed, his body blurred, and he put a hand against her neck. A flash of relief crossed the ghost hound's face, but once his focus returned to Ezzy, it had become that same stoic mask.
I suppose compensation is in order. Take me to the roof.
Chapter 2. The hot, hungry buzz of anger still roiled in his chest, but flowing below that, swiftly cooling him, was a deep well of regret and a prickling of guilt. The anger itself was exceedingly strange. It was the hottest thing he'd ever felt, but it simultaneously seemed to zoom him out, It was an animating energy with no easy point of exhaust that enraged him and made him heedless of the consequences. And that violent indulgence is what now made him nauseous. If Ezzy hadn't staggered into the room, distracting randomly, would he have continued until he killed Tessa? Shaking his head, he forced his mind away from that topic and was confronted with an equally vicious one. That hatred-fueled, focused episode of agony increased the skill level by 3, and it only took a dozen or so seconds. Randomly was aware that your mental state influenced the speed at which levels were gained, but still, this amount of growth seemed ridiculous. Was it because he targeted humans? Or was it just that he truly, desperately wanted to hurt Tessa in that moment for what she implied about Sydney? Either answer was disturbing, and Randley's guilt amplified. This was a question he needed to answer clearly in order to fully understand the system. Randley already planned on making use of the most efficient methods to improve. And if fighting against humans was the most effective method? If deeply, truly wanting to hurt your enemies was the most effective method? If losing his morality was the most effective? Randomly bit his lip. Maybe Tessa has a point about the way embracing the system could corrupt us. Is corrupting us. Following a white-faced Ezzy, they reached the roof. The majority of the taller buildings were clustered downtown, a mile or so away to the south. From this vantage point, Randomly had a clear view of the surrounding area. From last night's experience, Randomly came to one conclusion. Franksburg was doomed as it was now. Even without the raid boss to cause havoc for the rest of the week, the damage had already been done. People were panicked and flocking to get classes, as it was their only hope at protecting themselves. Due to the very unfair contracts that individuals were signing to get access, the Franksburg government was only too happy to oblige. Alana predicted the next monster horde would be half as large as the first. The city was simply too large to defend effectively. The populated district sprawled out into the vertical farming portion of the city, with only a token fence already trampled after the first night to protect them. The patrols had been fine when they were only dealing with wandering monsters, but now the freedom fighters struggled to clean up mere remnants of the monster horde that sluggishly continued to advance into the city. Obviously, all these new classers could make a difference, especially when there were so many dregs to fight for experience and skill levels, but with people already panicked, and with the contingent of Donnyton leaving today? Randomly sucked in a breath, appreciating that none of the stink of cultivation reached this high. He took that violent lava anger, filled with a strange prickling of ice. That sinking gulf of guilt as he pictured Tessa's unconscious face, and his confusion and worry about the system, and folded it all into a tight ball. He reached within himself, seeking the source of his mana, the same source he had so much trouble controlling with the Grace Lyra employed, and prodded it gently. As he expected, it stoically had no response. Smirking, Randomly lamented his relative lack of talent. If he could only figure out how to replicate Lyra's skills. But that was not his path, he acknowledged. His path lay elsewhere. And he could only keep his eyes on the ground and move forward, lest he lose his grip on the weapons he could wield. This time he grabbed his mana source and pulled, dragging out every drop he could with the help of a skill he hadn't yet had the opportunity to utilize. And then, with eyes burning emerald, he raised his hands and unleashed everything.
Be safe.
Derek Quinn pressed his eyes shut before shifting his gaze to the man beside him. Lucifer watched the caravan for Donnyton leave, his face serious. Even in their departure, they were studiously disciplined. Getting their new immigrants into a comfortable column and guiding them behind the rumbling of their transport vehicle. Derek Quinn rubbed the stump of his left arm and asked,
Did you want to go with them to this Donnyton?
After a long time, Lucifer nodded slowly.
It was a tempting offer, especially considering the knowledge and training they have access to. More than any individual decision, I worried about all of us. Luckily, most of the freedom fighters have family here, or else...
At least they recruited mostly from the university and other odd jobs, Derek Quinn said. But Lucifer's chuckle in response left a bad taste in his mouth. What so? The earth beneath their feet rumbled. Broken pieces of stone from last night's battle rattled and bounced off the asphalt as the whole area began quaking. Before either of them could react, the space to their immediate left and right of where they stood erupted with thorny vines surging upwards, twisting and twining, snaking amongst each other. The asphalt heaved and cracked like it was nothing more than dried clay. In some places, huge pillars of plant matter forced themselves upward, sporting massive thorns that adorned the thickening barrier like curved bayonets. Dirt and stones tumbled, falling into the holes created by this violent birth. As Derek watched, aghast, the thorny vines wove themselves into thick walls. They must have been at least 8 feet high. The plant structure rapidly spread along the perimeter of their defenses. As the plant walls stretched outward to cover a larger space, the height dropped, only reaching around 5.5 feet at its lowest. But the wall of thorns ran immediately adjacent to their previous defenses, bolstering them immensely. Like magic, Franksburg obtained the defensive boost it needed. Derek's mouth was working, but no sound came out. The barrier even reinforced the areas where the government was installing solid guard fortifications for their frontline fighters. This had been guided intelligently to form. Derek's view of the departing caravan through the main gate remained unchanged. Barely a ripple of reaction could be seen from them, as if they had been expecting this all along. Lucifer shivered as he looked after the departing group. So this is the mantle we have to carry now, huh? Congratulations, you have created an inspired wall of thorns. Rampart of thorns has been created. Congratulations, your skill wall of thorns has grown to level 6. Congratulations, your skill wall of thorns has grown to level 7. Warning, all mana has been depleted. Due to the use of inspiration, mana will not regenerate for 24 hours. Randidly lowered his hands as the thorny vines below him finally settled. His body felt empty. The heat of stamina remained near his heart, but the emptiness of his mana pool made his chest ache. Almost reflexively, he removed a mana potion from his bag. He smiled bitterly at it and put it away.
Extraordinary. I wondered who had wandered into my village, but...
Randidly turned toward the voice and found a bland-faced woman standing there, smiling slightly at him. The already overwhelmed Ezzy gasped and stumbled back from her. Something about her unnerved him in a very familiar way. He felt like he could only witness a fraction of her true form, like this humanoid body was just a mask she wore for the sake of interacting with them. This must be the Franksburg spirit guide. What Randidly didn't expect was that when he met her eyes, she gasped and took several steps towards him.
You possess... You've slain a tribulation? But why? You don't yet have a class.
The woman's voice transformed from shocked to nonplussed to eager to almost hungry over the course of several seconds. The intensity of her gaze steadily grew. With a wide smile, she clasped Randidly's hands and pressed herself closer to him.
Allow me to grant you the godly class you deserve. Just join my village, and I can make sure you will be unrivaled in strength in this zone.
I refuse. Randidly's eyes narrowed as several things clicked into place in his mind. During the worst of Randidly's depression, only Newell supported his constant prowling through the surrounding area. The system representative had always encouraged him to find and eliminate Donnyton's tribulation. He claimed the true potential of the village would finally be unlocked. Now, with this village spirit's recognition of something within Randidly, a theory began to form. There was a connection. A spirit always came with a matching tribulation, and when both were brought together, if the spirit and tribulation were somehow connected, and meant to become one, the system made a little more sense. Not in terms of the survival rate of newbie villages, but at least in terms of the motivation.
The Tribulation wanted to continue living just like they did, but needed to consume the village to do so. From the system's point of view, I wonder if it even cares if the locals survive. Randidly pressed his lips together. The question then became, what would the village gain by vanquishing the Tribulation, or even another village's tribulation, based on this spirit's reaction to him? What other secrets did the system hold? Randidly ignored the pleas of Franksburg's spirit and walked away. One phrase she spat at his back, once it was clear Randidly was uninterested, stuck in his mind.
Fool, you and your kind are doomed to starve. You will come crawling back. And do you think I will help you then? Ha! As you sicken and die, I'll savor your torment.
Charming. The edge of Randidly's lips curled into a smile. He was quite confident that walking away from this offer was the right choice.
Kimlath, the Tribulation of Many Faces, graced Lyra with a warm smile, still using Randidly's features. A small warmth fluttered in Lyra's heart from the affectionate look. She felt like a fool for letting this being affect her, but it was so easy to forget the truth. Their whole strained dance was cloaked in pretty lies.
Have you reconsidered the favor I asked for? Kimlath asked, delicately cutting off the edge of the wolverine steak and raising it to his lips.
Its lips, Lyra reminded herself.
They'd taken to having dinner every other night, chatting about innocuous things, almost like a date. A date where they refused to comment on the inevitable way their interaction would end. Everything was subtle and probing. They danced with words and smiles, and faux secrets, sly and content.
Lyra attempted to discover more information about this creature, and one bit of information she wanted in particular was his goal by contacting her. Not for a moment did Lyra believe she wasn't being used. Neither could she ignore the playful danger and subterfuge that filled her with an addicting adrenaline. Fighting was fun. But to comment on the weather, while wondering whether the next moment would finally be the time where all pretenses were stripped away and they would fight to the death?
Exactly this, Lyra thought. This complexity. This is why I always wanted to be an actress.
Kimlath tipped its hand slightly at their last dinner, where it had casually... too casually, asked to be shown around the village. Lyra had demurred, going into a long tirade about how annoying it was to deal with the people of Donnyton, which it increasingly was while Randidly was away. The people of Donnyton were entirely too gracious and respectful towards her. Some part of her enjoyed the way they naturally associated her with Randidly, but she quickly came to resent that look in their eyes. Her accomplishments became his. They spoke of him with reverent tones and dismissed all the practice she'd poured into her mana skills. Her few tricks had merely been birthed by their association. She was just some freak pet the mythical ghost hound raised. The only other reason people looked at her was to see if she could teach them her abilities. The people of Donnyton were unabashedly committed to training. And yes, though that was important, it dumbfounded her how quickly the joking and casual playfulness of the classers morphed into the brisk precision of a military base. Especially when they would not be able to keep up the pace of pushing themselves to their limits every day. Perhaps some of the hollowness Lyra witnessed in their expressions was the first signs of exhaustion. In her acting career, she'd witnessed dozens of co-stars go down the same neurotic path. If you twisted yourself hard enough, your head would burst from the pressure. A flush crept along Lyra's cheeks, and she ducked her head to hide it from the tribulation opposite her.
Rather than all their exercises, sometimes you need some friction. Like when Randidly and I spar. There is real aggression, but there is also heat. And fun. Probably a little too intimate to have Kimmy act out with me, however,
Lyra lamented. Kimlath's smile turned charming and not at all like Randidly.
While the people in your villages may be annoying, I find my thoughts turning to them increasingly often. Are you sure you cannot reconsider?
Perhaps before she had met the tribulation, Lyra would have said she wished Randedly could smile at her with beaming charm and affection, but seeing that look on these faux features left her with a sour taste in her mouth.
I think not,
Lyra said, abruptly tired of this slow dance. They had orbited the real issues, but hadn't committed yet. Honestly, she shivered to think of what would happen when the patience of the tribulation finally ran out. Despite the fact that this was simply a projection and not the real body, she felt tempted to attack and try to kill it. To her relief, Kimlath's response shifted its focus. Then how about the village next door? I simply would like to see how creatures like you live. Lyra thought about it and couldn't really find a reason why she shouldn't. She was slightly curious how Elaine was doing, even if she simultaneously hoped that Cal and Vivian needed to resort to back-alley handjobs to get by. The frustrating part about the two of them was they always seemed to land smugly on their feet.
You know what? Sure, Lyra said, and stretched.
She was due for some exercise anyway. Not that she really needed it. The system-enhanced world had almost everyone looking fit and toned. Honestly, Lyra wished staying the correct balance of curvy, slender, and toned had been this easy while she'd been paid for it.
Wait here, though. I want to check something first.
Chapter 3
Declan danced forward, his daggers bloody, and his eyes bright and focused on the wounded wyvern, the Tier 2 raid boss. It backpedaled as fast as its stubby legs could carry it, and flailed its injured wings, buffeting him with gusts of wind. Declan would not slow down now. He couldn't. The roars of the lesser monsters in the surroundings urged him to greater speed. He activated his leap skill and closed as much distance as possible. Once the raid boss fell, the minions would be easy to corral and slaughter. Most of the trouble that Declan's team encountered was getting close enough to the raid boss to launch their attacks. Once it was alerted, the raid boss's minions would swarm, making the kill almost impossible. Just as the raid boss's lieutenant scrambled forward to catch Declan and his assassination squad, a massive club slammed sideways and knocked one of the horse-sized wyverns staggering. Dozer rumbled forward with a grimace plastered across his face, and his squad followed. They were a sudden levy against the wave of desperate wyverns. In a brief moment between tenderizing the bodies of the monsters, Dozer gave Declan a look. Declan nodded in response and activated quick steps. The wyvern raid boss smashed into a lonely spruce in its haste to escape, cracking the trunk and toppling the tree. Declan salivated, practically tasting the stats he would earn for finishing off the powerful raid boss. He activated quick steps over and over, depleting his stamina without a care, carving wound after wound into the wyvern's shaking body. Congratulations, your skill Bloodsport, rare, has grown to level 19. Ivan and Tara hurried past Declan to keep the wyvern from escaping. Tara selflessly ducked underneath the wyvern's whipping tail and slammed her body into its wounded side. Scale cracked, and blood gushed from its wounds, earning a low whine from the wyvern. Meanwhile, Ivan hung back, his calculating eyes bouncing between raid boss and fighters. Declan knew he was weighing the odds of swiping the stat gains for himself. In a way, it amused Declan for his subordinate to be so greedy. Something about Ivan's attitude resurrected a vicious streak Declan had slowly let fall asleep in his stay in Donnyton. Declan reversed his grip on his daggers and slammed both blades into the wyvern's neck. Then, before the monster could respond, he spun away and tore a massive hole in the beast that hemorrhaged. He purposefully flung an arc of blood in Ivan's direction. If this fucker tries anything funny, he will regret it. The raid boss spun around, its sharpened tail smashing towards him. Declan gracefully leapt over it, earning himself another skill level in jump. He twisted midair and left long, jagged scratches across the raid boss's skin. Even now, Declan marveled at how easy violence had become with his stats and skills boosting him.
He had to hold back a grin. There was something about this life with the system. It was just so much fun. Wisely noticing he didn't need her help, Terra retreated, avoiding a follow-up blow from the enraged creature. Gritting his teeth, Ivan imitated Declan and dodged the swinging tail's claw strike. But his much lower control resulted in the monster's tail tangling his legs. Ivan collapsed in a ball of limbs. Declan smiled slightly and dashed forward, right in the raid boss's face. It hesitated for a second, tempted by the defenseless Ivan, but then erupted toward a nearby thicket of trees. It was more bulldozer than anything else, leaving several downed trees in its wake. Right when Declan was about to pursue, a thorny vine rose out of the ground in front of him. Its wickedly sharp thorns glinted in the night as the root wiggled back and forth. Declan released a hissing breath and skidded to a stop. "But we did all the work!" The vine pointed at Declan, shook itself, then spun in a lazy circle as if to say, "You are the one that brought it here to me. If you don't want me to take it, don't herd it toward me." The thorny vine flicked, clearly telling him to wait. Declan just sighed, exasperated. He'd been aware that the ghost hound's strange plant pet, Thorn, had been following his squad and mopping up a lot of the weaker minions of the raid boss, draining their bodies of blood and delivering the carcasses to Sam. Honestly, Declan thought the situation was a win-win. Sam was delighted at the intact bone structure of enemies killed this way, and had impressed upon Declan that this was a pet of the ghost hound. He should allow it free rein, assisting it whenever possible. Obviously, Sam's early grumbles about how torn and ruined animal pelts were when Declan killed his quarry hadn't just been complaints for the sake of complaining. How the hell can Thorn get such clean kills? Declan scowled after the vanished form of the wyvern. Its entire body is covered in thorns. It should turn any monster it constricts to Swiss cheese. Declan sat on his haunches, slowly recovering. No need to antagonize both Sam and the ghost hound over a single raid boss, even if he would have appreciated the level-up gains. Of course, his own patience did little for his subordinates. Ivan ran up to him, eyes bulging.
"What are you doing? It's getting away!"
Declan made a helpless gesture. "This is no longer just our quarry. We wait here." Ivan snorted and stomped forward. Truly, the man respected Declan only as far as he could throw him, despite the fact that Declan was the source of his class. Thorn's little vine turned to Ivan, then back at Declan. Declan just shrugged. Ivan made it 3 steps before several thorny vines burst from the ground, wrapping up his body in a split second, binding his arms to his sides. One vine, covered with particularly jagged thorns, wound its way around Ivan's neck, almost lazy in the motion. Instantly, all of the color vanished from Ivan's face, and he audibly gulped. The communication vine turned back to Declan, almost in askance. Ivan struggled helplessly, his strength nothing in comparison to the powerful, constricting vines of thorn. Very quickly, his face turned red and then purple, blood dripping out from dozens of small cuts the thorns made on his body. "See? How the hell does it provide such clean skins?" Declan thought sourly. At the same time, he replayed Thorn's movements in his mind. He'd known the ghost hound's pet was powerful, but this was beyond his expectations. Now that Declan knew its capabilities, he could probably avoid or escape. But if he had been taken by surprise? "Even his pets are monstrous. This man, I'm glad I met him." After letting Ivan struggle for a little while longer to teach him a lesson, Declan finally spoke. "I would prefer you not kill him. He is a capable subordinate." Thorn's main vine slid over to Ivan's suspended body, patting him in several places, seeming to consider. Then it unceremoniously dumped Ivan on the ground. He immediately gasped for breath and scrambled away from the tree line, his eyes wide with fear. Meanwhile, Thorn now beckoned Declan. The message was clear. The raid boss had been handled. Nodding, he followed it deeper into the trees. The raid boss had crashed forward with as much delicacy as a tank,
About a half mile directly through the trees, they came upon the remnants of the Tier 2 raid boss, bound by dozens of thorny vines. As he approached, the vines constricted, digging deeper into the monster's flesh. Several long scratches ripped open as the thorns dragged across it. What drew Declan's gaze was the mass crouching below the body. As the vines tightened further, several drips of blood were squeezed out from its flesh, as if the raid boss's body was being wrung like a washcloth. Those ruby drops fell into the strange, toothy maw of thorn. He couldn't help but suck in a breath. This was the first, and only time, Declan hoped, that he would see Thorn's core. It was a mass of soft flesh, a weird mixture of brown, pink, and green, with a red slimy tentacle slithering up through its rot-coated teeth to catch the drops of blood. All Declan could think of was a strange, twisted turnip that had dozens of saggy, cancerous growths sagging out from its body. And from those growths stretched thorny vines, sinking into the ground beneath it. The cancer turnip turned and twisted its toothy maw into an arc, in a strange imitation of a smile. Then, with surprising delicacy, the body of the raid boss was deposited on the ground in front of Declan. He tilted his head to the side. The eyelid of the raid boss fluttered weakly, and he froze. It was still alive? All Thorn wanted was to drink its blood? In a flurry of motion, the vines withdrew, ripping into the ground in a spray of dirt. Thorn, invisible almost immediately. Perhaps to show he was not afraid, Declan cleared his throat.
You know, Sam won't be happy when he sees its body like that.
A thorny protuberance popped out of the ground. The thorns grew and retracted back into the vine. It jabbed toward the daggers at Declan's waist, as though to say, I only used such rough methods because you already made a mess of things. The vine vanished, leaving Declan scowling over the corpse of the raid boss. Declan slit its throat and clicked his tongue. Upon hearing Declan's report, the council was silent, each of its members keeping their thoughts to themselves.
So, Sam spoke first, his brow furrowed. How strong do you think this thorn really is?
Declan shrugged wearily. Killing the Tier 2 raid boss had given him a nice boost to his endurance and agility, but the joy he usually felt from those kills was muted by the sight of thorns squeezing the body dry.
It's hard to compare. Against someone like me or a mage, Thorn could bind us and rip us to pieces. Against Dozer or Donnie, it might be more fair. The trick would be to avoid getting wrapped up, because once that happens... And while it's underground, it's almost impossible to detect.
Declan squinted at the ceiling.
By the time you realize it's there, it's too late.
But, I mean, do we really have to worry? It's the ghost hound's plant, right?
Daniel said nervously. Though the rest of the table seemed inclined to agree, everyone was slightly intimidated by this show of power by the creature. Despite the raid boss having been weakened by their squads beforehand... Even Sam couldn't find his usual cheer at such an intact, high-level corpse. As a general rule, humans were more powerful than they had ever been, in terms of physical abilities. There was even the beginning of documented proof that intelligence and wisdom actually increased your mental capabilities, although it was starting to appear that control and focus had a more direct impact on the non-system aspects of life. The monsters that once drove humanity screaming into their cellars were now casually dealt with. But stronger and stronger monsters kept appearing to match them and urge them toward faster growth. And though this plant was currently friendly, it still made them slightly uneasy to have it within the bounds of their village.
Ultimately, though, Regina said, gazing at each person present, what can we do?
No one had an answer. So the meeting moved on to other matters.
I'd like to make some suggestions in regards to the soul point expenditures, Daniel said, his expression nervous.
Mrs. Hamilton steepled her fingers, her expression neutral. Regina leaned back in her chair. Glendale covered his mouth with his hand and sighed. In his heart, Glendale knew Daniel had the best interests of the town as his focus, and was deeply regretful that his rash action caused them to go through a stressful few days.
But with that mistake fresh in everyone's mind, this would not be a receptive audience. Before he began, the door to the council chamber swung smoothly open. The dying light of the setting sun illuminated Lyra, who for the first time wore a serious expression.
"I'm heading over to visit Turtletown," she announced. "If I have the chance, is there anything I should ask of their king?"
There was a long, stunned moment of silence.
"Absolutely not," Sam said, slamming his fist on the table. "Who knows what sort of preparations that crazed man has made?"
"I understand that I'm young, as you all keep reminding me."
Lyra's smile was calm, her voice low, but for some reason Sam couldn't yell over it. Even Glendale's ghosts, which swirled around him constantly, slowed down, their focus narrowing on the figure framed in the doorway.
"But I want you to think logically. Out of everyone here in Donnington right now, is there a more skilled user?"
Her whole body began to glow, waves of chaotic mana rolling off her to fill the air. Her pupils faded, blending into the iris, replaced by a glowing blue until it seemed her whole soul was burning bright, shining out through her glowing azure eyes. She was just a veneer of humanity, lit from the inside by a vicious, tightly controlled power. Mana surged and seethed, ready to lash out and destroy any obstacles in her way. That was really what animated her.
"Let me start again. I am heading to Turtletown. As a courtesy, I came here first. Is there anything you want me to say?"
In Lyra's deserted home, nothing moved. Inexplicably, a voice spoke and filled the dimly lit room.
"This is a chance. We must hurry. I always detested games, but she forced us into this game of chicken. Will you find me, or will I become strong enough that your interference won't matter?" If someone had been there to look, they would have seen the head of a black-haired young man floating just below the ceiling. But this illusion quickly unraveled. The hair was thin, parasitic worms, wriggling away from the head and thumping to the floor. The lips ruptured and bled, and the skin dripped away from the face like candle wax before flame. The eyes popped and deflated until phlegmy dregs and pond scum bubbled in the bottom of the hollow cavities. But the empty gaze remained fixed south. "Ghost hound, you must die."
Chapter 4. Randidly felt far more volatile from his usual calm, and dark thoughts followed him no matter what he turned his mind to. The horrible anger that made him lash out at Tessa was still too raw. Her helpless expression as she fell unconscious remained fresh in his mind. When their convoy crossed the newbie zone around Franksburg, Randidly's chest became hot with anxiety. Devon and Alana had enough able-bodied people to protect everyone, even though the return group had ballooned in size. He turned back toward the horde of monsters gathering for another night raid on Franksburg. Even without mana, Randidly was confident he'd be able to blunt the edge of the system's blade.
"I can't change the past, but I can make up for it," Randidly urged himself. "I can shield her city from danger, at least for one more night."
His thoughts swirled as he loped through the tree line. Were Sydney and Ace still alive? Would the tribulation strike at Donnington before he returned? Did the system really reward using skills against fellow humans? Randidly shivered as he ducked under a low-hanging branch. Luckily, a notification popped up, distracting him from his train of thought. "Congratulations, your Thorn level 5 is ready to level up." After slurping many similar enemies, Thorn wonders if it should be one of many, or the one. Frowning, Randidly selected the one. There was only one path to a good life in this world now, and it was through power. With it, you could take the things you crave. Without it, Thorn is now level 6. Survivability has increased by 5. Physicality has increased by 2. Particularity has increased by 3. Thorn has learned the skill, piercing thorns.
Randidly didn't know what he expected, but it was oddly disappointing to read through the message. He slapped his cheeks, trying not to let his mood continue to keep his entire outlook sour. He wished... Randidly's spear flicked out, smashing apart a skeleton that stumbled out between the spruce trees. His eyes flashed. If nothing else, the fighting will keep me from dwelling. With a roar, he charged into the skeletons. He swung his huge spine spear back and forth, reaping their lives and flinging bits of broken bone in every direction. After scanning the surrounding forest for any other humans, he activated agony. The grating, vicious pain was oddly soothing. It narrowed his focus, drowning out the incessant negative thoughts. The guilt, the helplessness, the confusion, the anger, the worry, everything was blasted away, leaving only a growing rage and a constant pain. Maybe it was because he struggled for so long to survive in the dungeon before he returned to Earth. He had a weird capability dysmorphia, which led him to abandoning Donnyton for a night, and now allowing his presence to force Franksburg into a village before it was ready. In some corner of his heart, he wondered if Tessa had a point. Lost and unsure of what he should be doing, he latched onto the survivors, slowly teaching them to become strong, instructing them in the same way he'd learned to become strong, by throwing them into the fire. The skeletons clattered their jaws and crowded around. Randidly was a blurred force, whipping his weapon around. The noise of his heartbeat steadily rose, and that warm rush of blood carried all his thoughts away. Yet in that surging heat, the vicious ghost hound part of himself comforted Randidly. At the very least, by Randidly informing Earth's survivors they were about to be cast into the fire before doing it, he'd increased their chances for survival far above what they would have been otherwise. The timeline was accelerated, but he'd given them some of the tools they needed. Randidly's eyes glowed pale green in the darkness, his spear smashing agonized monsters to pieces. Several times he reflexively activated a mana skill, only to feel the hollowness in his abdomen and wince. His lack of mana didn't make him any less a death sentence for monsters of this level, regardless of how many clustered around him. His swings were powerful and accurate. He didn't even need to activate Heavy Blow to slaughter them. And if he refrained from skills, his efficient movements would prevent him from running out of stamina. Congratulations, your skill, Fighting Proficiency, has grown to level 40. Even as a notification popped up indicating that his health had reached 20% due to the constant activation of agony, Randidly's smile didn't waver. He downed 2 health potions and continued, barely slowing his vicious assault, refusing to shut off the painful skill. Although it slowly wore his own health down, it did worse things to the enemies around him, especially now, where a growing corner of his heart trembled with gnawing fear, guilt, anger, confusion, and frustration. And that part of him wanted to hurt something. Heeding his will, agony rolled out in malicious waves, larger and more powerful than it had ever been before. Somehow his intent sharpened the skill. As dusk fell, his luminous green eyes hunted as many monsters as he could find. The system responded to his desire, not just with levels, but with increased effectiveness. Randidly supposed it wasn't really the system that changed, but himself. Where before he wore agony like a blanket, dragging it around behind him, now he actively reached out with it, smothering those enemies unfortunate enough to cross his path. The pain ended up only doing so much. He couldn't cover the question that was driving him insane. In fact, the pain seemed to crystallize his hesitation into several demanding lines. After the tribulation, what should I be doing? What do I want? It was easier when I was just helping Shaul. Grinding his teeth, Randidly threw himself deeper into the violence, drowning out his helpless doubts. The sky darkened, and a low drizzle began to fall. Randidly ignored it, as it made no difference to him. Where he once fought in puddles of blood, now he squelched through puddles of viscera and mud. What did it matter? His spear bounded between his hands as if in dance, leaving bodies falling to pieces around him. As he did so, Randidly noticed something extremely strange.
Rather than having a goal, he was simply killing for the sake of killing. He was protecting the town, he supposed, but that had fallen away, lost in the revelry of blood. And it was so easy to lose myself like this. He cut and slashed, feeling through the huge spear of bone the small tremors of a body breaking. With his undivided attention, Randall experimented with where and how he could strike, how he could cut, how he could slaughter. No, it wasn't just wanton slaughter. He was experimenting. Through the haze of bloodlust and exertion, the desire to grow stronger brought his focus back to more productive avenues. Slowly, his disparate spear moves began to flow together, moving cleanly from one to the other. Previously, he used each when he needed them, phantom thrust for speed and accuracy, sweep for a large group, phantom onslaught to overwhelm a single target. Randall began to see the use of swinging the butt of the spear around for a staggering blow, intermixing roundhouse kicks to throw the opponent off. Slow and steady at first, but with greater surety, Spear Phantom's footwork guided him from one enemy to the other, the deaths continuing unabated. It was likely aided by grace, which almost inexplicably streamlined his movements, just a hair, but enough to notice during particularly complicated portions of his budding fighting style. That's what I'm doing right now, Randall realized, discovering my own fighting style. Almost immediately, he stopped using agony, although it definitely had a role in narrowing his focus to just his movements. As he let the spell fall around him, the monsters staggered, then peered at him with hateful eyes. As rapidly as their low-leveled bodies could manage, they threw themselves at him, hissing, spitting, and clacking. Randall grinned, his spear moving to meet them. Perhaps it wasn't a long-term solution to his question, but for now it would have to do. He would grow strong, so he wouldn't be helpless when the system threw more in his way. He swung his spine spear down on a charging boar, shattering its skull and driving its tusks into the ground. Then he spun around and thrust the heavy blade into the ribcage of a goblin, just as it raised its hatchet. The spear was, Randall had to admit, a great weapon. Before it, the monsters were fragile and small. He'd never really gotten into Shal's fanatical pursuit of the godhood that was becoming a true spearman, but Randall couldn't help but marvel at the utility a spear provided to him. Thus far, he had relied on Shal's moves, but in this moment, Randall was starting to see. The spear was designed perfectly as a killing tool. Oppressively powerful, quick and graceful,